And as you get yourself settled, if you could, if you haven't already, open up your Bibles to the passage which Will just read for us. Thank you, Will. I'll come forward so I can use the... So, Luke 24... Because I'm going to be asking you questions. And if you're like me, you haven't memorized it, so. Okay. Good morning. So some of you might be familiar with this story, and I'm about to recount. After the death of his wife, the man was overcome with such grief. So in order to dampen his sorrow, he tried switching his daily routine in the hope that he could avoid being reminded of her over and over again, and so avoid remembering about the pain of his loss over and over again. So he avoided walking down the streets that they had walked down together. He switched to a new grocery store. It sounds funny, but he switched to a new grocery store. And he never went back to their restaurant. He tried. He tried to escape this grief, but he found he could not escape it. Instead, when he wrote about it later, he said that her absence is like the sky, spread over everything. That was C.S. Lewis. Writing in A Grief Observed. Now, I wonder if something like this is happening to the two people who are walking towards Emmaus together. They are on the run from grief. It is, be careful here, it is, even though it's 2 weeks, we marked Easter Day 2 weeks ago, in our reading from Luke, it is Easter Day. It is the very same day that the empty tomb has been discovered by Mary, and in Luke's account, other women, including Joanna and Mary, mother of James. In Luke's account, when the women go running back to tell the rest of the friends of Jesus what they have seen, those who hear the news do not believe the women. In fact, they think what they're saying is nonsense. And out of this group of doubters, those who are saying that's nonsense, out of that group come these two who walk down the road. How fast do we walk when we're on the run from something? These two had hoped that Jesus was going to be the one to redeem Israel. And I think that phrase, had hoped, is going to be a key for us this morning. They had hopes that Jesus was going to do something. He was going to be the one to redeem Israel. They have just been with their rest of the friends, hanging out with the rest of their friends, when this group have come running from the tomb, saying that the tomb is empty. And then things get really unstuck. And we see a few things that follow. Number one, the women bring their insight to this larger group. However, the larger group dismissed the testimony, even though Jesus has been explaining what is going to happen for basically his whole ministry with his friends. So I wonder, what do you think? The women arrive with something to say. The tomb is empty. The angels have said he is risen. How do the women feel when those who are already there say that's nonsense? How are they going to be feeling? How are they going to be responding? How have you responded when you've told somebody something and they've said, that's nonsense? Angry? Silent might be one, right? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they don't believe me. Angry? Silent? Idiots, they feel like idiots? No, I'll ask you about them in a second. I'm just talking about the women. Be gentle, John. Be gentle. So you think that those who bring the testimony, they're thinking those guys are idiots. Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Beg your pardon. I jumped to conclusions. Yes.
Helpless.
Yeah. Do you think they're challenging themselves? Oh, maybe we were wrong. Maybe the tomb wasn't empty. Because they've just been told it's nonsense. Maybe I am. Maybe it is nonsense. Yeah, they're starting to doubt. Anything else about the women?
Hurt.
Absolutely. Embarrassed.
Brave.
They're feeling brave. Say more, Dan.
Pardon?
Say more. Oh, awesome, Dan. Okay, so Dan's saying they should be feeling courageous. They're feeling courageous because they've gone to the place they would have thought was holding the body of their friend and their Lord who they've just seen crucified 2 days before. Yeah, absolutely. So they've had to gird their loins. Okay, we're going to do it. Even though it's hard, we're going to go. What about the rest of the group? And I'm not going to, I think we know that the group who go to the tomb are women. The rest of the group, we don't know. So it's not a he said, she said thing at all. So let's not go there. But for the rest of the group, those who are there to receive the news, they've heard this news. They say it's nonsense. How are they feeling?
Skeptical.
Angry. They're feeling angry. Why are they feeling angry?
Because the person who promised them redemption is dead.
Yeah.
And these women are coming back
to his news
and it's like, you saw him die.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah. I'm angry. Don't try and open up that whole wound for me. I need to leave it. Just, yeah. Jamie?
Confused.
They're confused.
His body isn't there.
Yes. Apparently. Allegedly.
Right.
Yeah, so, oh. But it's still nonsense.
But
or maybe they're doubting themselves, too. I saw a hand over here, yes. Puzzled?
I think maybe there's this little tiny part of them that wants to believe that would be true.
Yeah.
But how could it be?
So there's a tiny part of, for the rest of the group, they really want it to be true. But maybe the group think dominates here, and they say, no, it's nonsense. Did I see another hand over here? I thought maybe I saw movement. Okay. Yes. 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 So it's a group of women. Yeah. It's a group of women, and they're entering into a group that certainly has lots of men in it. We don't know how many women are there at the time. Because, and I'll tell you, my bias is that when you read about the two that are walking down the road, only one is named as a man. The other one never gets named. So we don't know the gender of that other person. So, and I'm not going to make assumptions. So let's not make assumptions. But so that person... So there could be women in the receiving group as well, but absolutely. So Stacey's saying, what's the power dynamic that's happening when the women come with this news? How does this dominant group respond to it? That's awesome. Yes, Sarah. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It was as the women said, although they didn't see Jesus, but at least the body was gone, the grave was closed, the stone. That part of the story is true.
Yeah.
So now what's the rest of it, right? So there's
yeah.
amazement, and maybe, I don't know, this sort of, well, they're perplexing, right?
Yeah, they're absolutely.
They're very perplexed.
Yeah. That's great.
It's all been hours, right, for us.
Yes. It's all very quick.
For them, it's all in the moment. It's just hours later.
It's hours later. And it's really interesting, because so Sarah's referring to how the two speak to the stranger. Okay, so what they are retelling. So we have the retelling of Luke initially, and then the retelling. So there's a shift. So it'd be interesting. I'll leave that with you, but have a look how Luke tells it. So, for example, what the women say is nonsense in Luke's first telling, and then when they tell the stranger, they were amazed. So something's happened. So I don't know if they're putting a bow on it to make it look nicer or what, but it's very interesting. Will?
They decided to leave as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, so we're saying they left, so that's a good question mark. Why do they go? And I'm going to talk about that. So, did you read my sermon? What happens in clergy households? 11:15 at night on a Saturday. So thank you. That's really awesome. So, we are getting a sense, a lovely sense here of things getting unstuck. As a result, these hopes that these two had had, and the others must have had, not being fulfilled. And so the first one is that we have this myriad of feelings that are flowing as a result with the group. And so the group fractures. In Luke's gospel, Peter runs off to see the tomb by himself. He sees that it's empty, and then what does he do? He goes off wandering by himself. And his broader understanding somehow seems obstructed. He doesn't realize what has happened. It's empty. And he goes wandering off. Okay, he still hasn't realized it. So he's heard from the women, he's gone to the tomb, and he's still wondering. But a little bit of fracture. He splits away from the group. And then we have these two who also set off for Emmaus. The group is fracturing. And then we talked about all those feelings that also must be certainly attacking the fellowship that would have existed. Also interesting is how the two that are walking along the road distance themselves from Jesus. Have a look, please, at verse 19, if you can, in chapter 24. What do the two, how do they first refer to Jesus? The first thing they say before you get to the prophet bit. Jesus of Nazareth. So what does that tell you about him? He's not from here. He's from that no good town, never heard of town. So it's like saying Julie of East York. Not that East York is no good or anything, but, you know, it's like Julie of East York. It's like, it's from where I'm from. It tells you where you're, the place, but doesn't really tell anything about who he is. They don't call him Jesus Christ. They don't call him Lord. They don't call him Messiah. They just say Jesus from Nazareth. Okay. So, and then what else do they say? So he's Jesus of Nazareth. What's the next thing they say about him? Someone shout out. He was a prophet. So he's a prophet. So they're conceding that he's a prophet. And then he was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. So some really cool things happened. But like Leif was saying, he's grounded now. There's nothing heavenly about him because he's in a tomb. We had hoped. What a heartbreaking phrase. We had hoped. I think that they're retreating here because they're not really sure who Jesus is. They had those hopes. And indeed, when the two bump into their dear, dear friend, Jesus himself, Luke underscores for us, they don't recognize who he is. They're confused, they're puzzled, and they are on the run. But when they meet Jesus on the road and they still don't recognize him, he first asks them what they're talking about with such intensity. What are you discussing together as you walk along? How can you not know what's been happening in Jerusalem? And I love this question because presumably the Romans were killing people on the cross all the time. It was one of their key ways of state control. and punishment. So there would have been crucifixions, goodness knows how frequently, but it wasn't a special deal. And let's not as well forget that those in the surrounding areas, like on the road to Emmaus, who would have heard about the crucifixion? It's just happened on Friday, and he went into the tomb, and he's dead, as far as everybody knows, except for a few who have seen that the tomb is empty. So it isn't really a big deal, and yet they say, how can you not know what's going on? The question, how can you not know, for me, indicates that their grief and turmoil and dashed hopes is their main focus. It consumes them. And because it looms so large for them, they assume it must be the main focus for others. That happens in our own lives, right? And so when Jesus says, what things? In verse 19, he then listens to them, recap what has happened over the past 3 years, and he takes the time to listen to them. Although he knows better than them what has happened. Yet there is still something that they need to hear. And eventually he asks them, did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter into his glory? Well, the actions of the majority of the disciples give us the answer to their answer to that question. And the answer is no. No, Christ did not have to suffer these things and then enter into his glory. Of course not. That's how they're behaving. They thought that something else was going to happen. And when these things does happen, they just can't recognize it. They are too shattered. How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Foolish, obtuse. Jesus sure sounds frustrated. And then he calls them slow of heart. Jesus is telling them and the rest of the that them and the rest of the disciples have not fully orientated themselves to Jesus' teaching, their inner commitments, their attitudes, their heart directed elsewhere. And maybe for these two, their heart was focused on Jesus redeeming Israel in the way they wanted Israel to be redeemed. So Jesus unpacks everything that the scripture says about the Messiah, how all the prophecies are being fulfilled in and through him. And he shows them the way it was meant to be from the beginning. Jesus is saying what he has been saying all along. This is what had to happen for the redemption of Israel. And he takes their puny expectations, their we had hoped, and he opens them up. He radically redefines the redemption of the Jewish people, and not by crushing the Roman oppressors, not with a temporary political fix with military might and some fireworks in the sky, not escaping from their crap in Jerusalem. And we will see that none of us can escape our hard stuff by running to Emmaus. Instead, Jesus is redefining redemption. The new heaven and the new earth, the place where justice will be at home. That's 2 Peter 3. And this is all about the kingdom. The kingdom of God is where God is present, where God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. And this place is only possible because in Jesus, forgiveness of sins is possible. And through forgiveness of sins is the reconciliation of God and the world. Jesus, the Messiah, the Christ, was sent by God to do more than we can ask or imagine. We come before God with our hurts, our petitions, and our hopes. He knows our hearts and our longings better than we know ourselves. However, we can be like the man who tried to avoid his grief. We too can shape our lives by avoiding our brokenness constantly on the road to Emmaus. But you know what? That road can be long, and it's lonely, and it never goes anywhere. fills your day with nothing. What about when it seems like we can't seem to get out from under the hopes that we had built for ourselves? We constructed those hopes with good things at the center of it. So busy, though, building up those hopes on our own that we end up failing to notice much beyond ourselves. And when those hopes that we have built for ourselves don't materialize the way we had hoped, had envisaged, we can feel like we're worthless, like we're failures. And so some of us head off on the road to Emmaus to get away from our had hopes. How is that road different, though, when we meet Jesus there? When we talk to him, even when we really don't understand what is going on, when we can't see a way out? How different is that road when we discover that he is a straight-up friend who tells us the truth, who will meet us where we are and put our lives in the context of the big story, God's story of liberation from sin and death? How different is that road when we discover that we are walking with the King, that he is taking us to this new heaven and this new earth? How are our lives shaped by forgiveness of sins? We're adopted into God's family. We are his beloved sons and daughters. And we are invited to the banquet. We're saved, redeemed, and we're being transformed. We are heading to Zion, to the new heaven and the new earth. How does this truth shape your today and your tomorrow?